Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom. It's a somber day on Bubba and the Bloom. So we're going to kick it off with a moment of silence for a fallen soldier. All right, everybody, as you know, we've lost the mascot today. It's a sad day at Bubba and the Bloom era. The mascot was everything to the show since dating back to November when everyone doubted us, when we just loved his multi-position eligibility, that little bearded monster him. There was many injuries this season, and he fought through them like the wonderful human being that he is. He hit 300 on the season, which was great for the young man named Luis Rengifo that will be deeply missed this year. Six home runs, 24 stolen bases. Things you just can't quantify, though, is what he meant to this team. The team is Bubba and the Bloom and all the listeners that have showed their loving and caring support for the lost soldier that is Luis Rengifo. 27 is far too young to start missing games. He's no Mike Trout. He still has a long way to go in his career. But it's a sad day in Bubba and the Bloom lore, and I will keep more to myself before I start crying live on air, which is a tremendous blow to this show. So I will pass it on to my co-host, Ryan. Do you have any final words for Mr. Luis Rengifo?
Luis, it was November 2023 when we met you. It was our second base preview show, and I remember it like it was yesterday. You were our favorite second baseman. And then you were our favorite shortstop on the following week's show. And then our favorite third baseman. And then our favorite outfielder. So we decided, hell, we'd just make you our show mascot for the 2024 season. Others doubted you. Your own manager wouldn't even play you at the beginning of the season. You got hurt. You went through ups and downs. But then everyone saw what we saw in you. And that was a 300 batting average, 24 steals, 6 homers, and plugging holes on our rosters every Monday and Friday as everyone else got hurt. So we didn't want it to end this way, but all good things must come to an end. So for Bubba, for myself, and for all of the Bubba and the Bloom family, we'll miss you, Luis, and we'll see you next year.
All right. One more moment of silence before we begin the show. And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom. As we are here to memorialize Luis Rengifo, but we're also here to get you caught up on fantasy baseball. It was a tough day in the family. We lost a legend to the team, which is a shame, and we can't drop him. Yes, pour some out, pour some high noons out. I even had to blow my candle out before I light my room on fire, but that would be typical. That would be perfect for the way my soul feels for Luis Rengifo. But we're here to talk some fantasy baseball, have some fun with you guys. Remember, you can find me on Twitter at BDNTrick, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and my co-host, as always, on Twitter at RyanBHQ. Besides the Luis Rengifo news, Ryan, how are we doing, my friend?
Oh, that was tough. Yeah. It was tough to get through. Glad we got through it. I'm doing good, man. I'm on, aside from the Rengifo news, I'm on the rebound. My week started with by fabbing the wrong Festa in our Bubba and the Bloom listener league.
Oh, no.
Took Matt Festa, $22 on a pose.
We joked about that people might do that on the Bench with Bubba show, and it actually happened.
It happened. That was me. But since that was a rough way to start the week. But since then, played some golf on the coast on Monday. It was Pops' birthday tonight.
Nice.
So happy the old man turned 72. Yep. And even better, get to talk the next 60 to 90 minutes with you. So yes, Rengifo news aside, doing much better, man.
Yes. And we're obviously, it does suck, but we're joking because it's just been really sweet in a fun way, not like a sweet romantic way, but a fun way. Ryan and I have been texting a lot. I told Ryan I was in the middle of a meeting. I get a text from Ryan about, like, he sends me a screenshot of everyone tweeting us about Rengifo. I get to my truck. It really hits home. And then Ryan and I have been texting most of the evening, laughing like about just, or actually not laughing, but more just like the support from the listeners. That was awesome. Like just showing you guys are invested in the show is pretty sweet stuff. So I want to throw that out there before we like can make a complete joke of the situation. Cause yes, you can drop them, folks. That's official. So make that happen.
I guess we should like official, unless you said, and I missed it. Like he didn't die. Luis Ronquillo did not actually pass away. But if you're living under a rock and only listening to our show, but it is the, season ending wrist surgery that we kind of all
saw coming.
I remember I texted you on Sunday right before Fab. I was like, is Ronquillo a drop in 15s? I think you said wait it out. That's what I did. And now it's a drop. Yeah.
I said like I wanted to wait one more, and then he came. I think he played on Monday or something, and then it just went bye-bye. So it's all good in that regard. But we're here to recap some recent news. It's Tuesday. We do an interactive Bloom boards like we did about a month ago, kind of catch up on the last 30 days and have all that kind of fun stuff. White Sox got their first win tonight. It's just ironic. We lose the mascot. The White Sox get a win. It's just hell on earth. And as Dom says, the eligibilities are dead, though. And that is true. That's hard to find in the fantasy world. So that's going to take some fun to figure out. Oh, and as Dom mentions, he's only third base, second base next year. No outfield or shortstop. So still middle infield, corner infield, which I appreciate in a tremendous way. So we'll see how that one plays out. But let's get caught up on some of the news and notes before I continue to talk about Ronquillo for the entire show and lose every listener we possibly can, because I can and I will if you let me. So let's talk about some recent news, and we'll kick it off with Grayson Rodriguez, who was scratched 6 minutes before opening pitch. He was getting loose in the outfield, went to the bullpen, said, I don't feel right. They yanked him, started Albert Suarez. He has basically a teres-like lat muscle strain is what they're calling it now. I was reading some stuff from a beat writer, Ryan, that said this is the same injury he had last year before he was about to come back to the bigs, and he was out for 3 months. We still obviously should wait for the imaging and testing, but this seems like a long-term thing for Grayson, and when we talk Thursday, this could be a whole different conversation.
Yeah, it could be, and it sucks because it's kind of, honestly, it was out of the blue. Like Grayson, I guess, he pitched really well in July. 28% strikeout rate, missed a ton of bats. Like this kind of came out of the blue, but that's a damn ominous report you just gave there. So we hold until we can and go from there. But if it's the same thing as last time, that's not good. Albert Suarez did come in and pitch five scoreless, six Ks, two hits, two walks. So that was good. And I assume Suarez would be back in the Baltimore rotation if Grayson's out. Not that great, but a 15-team streamer, kind of like what Albert Suarez was earlier. So, wait and see on Grayson. It's been a hell of a year for him, though. He was on we talked about him a good bit on our whatever starting pitcher mid-year recap thing, and came as advertised coming off that strong second half.
Yep. Well, it's kind of wait and see, but the fact that the team has not said anything since he got scratched, besides what the injury was, is not making me feel warm and fuzzy. Usually, like, if a guy has some kind of injury, it's like, well, this imaging came back negative and we'll do more, or he's day-to-day or something. There's been nothing. It's been crickets. The manager hides by trying to figure out how to pinch hit to the right hitters and not the wrong hitters still. I don't know. But they're having issues with Grayson Rodriguez. Gabriel Moreno. He left Monday's game with a groin injury. Like, he toppled over on the ground. It did not look good. I mentioned it in my write-ups and on last night's first pitch that it did not bode well for the future for Moreno, and he hit the IL on Tuesday. Always silver linings, hopefully, and we might have one. Adrian Del Castillo is going to get called up by the D-backs to make his MLB debut. Tore up the PCL League, 36 doubles, I believe, led the league at 24 homers, hit .319, 70 RBIs. Big-time hit and catcher. Now, does that translate to the bigs? We'll see. But any thoughts on this Moreno to the IL? And because it's going to be at least 2 weeks. I could see this being at least a month when all things are said and done.
Yeah, and if it's a month, it's for sure drop, even a couple of weeks. Like, I think you just try and stream the second catcher pool and go from there. I mean, that's our bread and butter here on Bubba and the Bloom, is finding those streaming second catchers. It's going to be like a timeshare, I guess, between Jose Herrera and Adrian Del Castillo. The numbers do look good in AAA, but we always take those with a grain of salt. And the adjustment going from AAA to the major, especially for a catcher, it's always hard, but for a catcher, it's even harder to try and handle an MLB rotation and then also try and hit. So I don't know. I'm not all that excited about Del Castillo, but just, I don't know. We'll cover more. I'm sure we'll cover more catchers on our Fab show on Thursday if you're looking for Moreno replacements. But at this point in the season, if it's a couple weeks, unless they're really good, we've only got, 5 weeks left? So it's quickly entering drop territory.
Yeah, it's definitely is. And a side note, I guarantee you we'll cover catchers on Thursday. Let's just put it that way. Ryan said we might. I'm like, yeah, no, we will. Don't you worry about that, folks. Side note, I know it's kind of off the beaten topic here, but there's a lot of guys rehabbing or set to do rehab assignments. I'm not going to go over all of them. I put some on the list, but we won't talk about them all. But I do want to ask you just for fun and probably better for a Thursday show, but we'll throw it in now. With only like 7 weeks left of Fab, essentially, how are we thinking about stashing? Because like there's guys starting rehabs that are going to be like coming back in a week to 2 weeks. Is it worth the stash is the question.
I guess my general rule of thumb at this point is similar to what I said with like Moreno, 2 weeks max, yeah. Maybe a week. And a pitcher even less. Like I Mookie Betts is like the example that comes to mind. That's a bad example because he's probably held on every team, but like that's someone who's probably a week away. And yes, you pick that up and you stash that. But for pitchers, they have to be really very imminent. For hitters, I would say a couple weeks at this point, something like that.
Yeah, like Starling Marte is starting to rehab Wednesday. Michael Harris started one today, but he can't come back till the 14th. Mason Miller's coming back tomorrow, so that's not a stash, but you know what I mean? Like, yeah. Merrill Kelly could be back in a week. Stuff along those lines could make things interesting, so people should keep an eye on that. I did want to throw out the Ronaldo Lopez finally went on the IL. The imaging came back clean on his forearm like a week ago almost now, but he just couldn't get it going. So now he's going to go to the IL, but on Tuesday he started playing catch again, so that's already a good sign in my books. But again, time will tell. What are we doing with Ronaldo Lopez? There's still no timetable yet. It's a forearm injury. We knew they had to limit innings at some point with Ronaldo Lopez. That's an interesting one for me.
It is. And I think we probably all, I don't want to say all saw this coming, but it was certainly within the range of outcomes given that Lopez was a reliever transitioning to a starter. Like you kind of feel like this was going to happen. My hope is that it's just a minor thing and we see Lopez again next year. I don't know. We have four more days to wait it out, see if we get more updates. But if Lopez is out another week or so, I think we move on. The July skills for Ronaldo Lopez were pretty bad. The K rate was down 10 whole points in July from June. So he had like a 10% K minus walk, much fewer whiffs. So this is unlike Grayson Rodriguez. Like this is something that we may have been able to see coming with Ronaldo Lopez, because the skills were starting to take a dive. For somebody who has 110 innings already this year and hadn't reached 70 in each of the last three plus seasons, just because he was in the bullpen. So even if Lopez comes back, I'm still skeptical like how good he looks, you know, if he's back.
Yep, I'm with you on that one. A couple things here in the chat. Uncle Ted said stash Rasmussen easy. Rasmussen's expected to get activated from the IL on Wednesday, so stashing's over. It's put up or shut up. See how he pitches. It's kind of a Jeffrey Springs thought to me when it comes to Rasmussen. But
is Rasmussen in the rotation or bullpen?
That's the million-dollar question. I don't think he's in the rotation just yet.
I think he starts in the pen.
I think he starts in the pen, too. That's where it gets even more fun with Drew Rasmussen. But they keep dropping like flies, so I wouldn't be surprised if we find him somewhere else. But, yeah, he will be in the bullpen. They say he's going to be in the bullpen for 2024, so probably the whole season. So something to keep in mind there. Another question here, Carlos, our buddy Carlos Marcano says, give me the non-sweetened answer. I fabbed Yamamoto for $19 in the main event. How many starts do you think I'll get for him?
Carlos, it probably as many as my $22 fab bid for Matt Festa, unfortunately. You may get a couple starts from Yamamoto, but I don't. The Dodgers are grooming Yamamoto for the playoffs. Like,
yes.
You may get a couple starts. Will those starts be five innings? Yeah, tough to tell. He'd have to be really efficient. So I'm not expecting much from Yamamoto. $19 in a fab league, like that's fine if you want to take that dart and you have room to stash. But yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, Yamamoto is supposed to be throwing a bullpen here this week. and maybe start rehabbing here next week or so, but he'll have a longer rehab. Like you said, they want him for the postseason. So it's one of those situations and see where it goes. Kevin Hastings in the chat says another B&B favorite, Christopher Sanchez, surviving the Dodgers through six. That's a big one. But like we talked about before the show, Ryan, no strikeouts.
Yep. 2 Ks for Christopher Sanchez. I think, and myself included, I was obviously a huge Christopher Sanchez guy before the season. ERA looks great. You see the ERA, it looks awesome, and you think it's a breakout, but whip's been okay. Low Ks. I don't know how many wins Christopher Sanchez has off the top of my head, but a good year for Christopher Sanchez. I'm not, I don't know, given the non-ERA categories that we don't pay as much attention to, it's been just a good year. 7 wins, about to get his 8th win tonight. So, yeah, I don't know. You look at like the overall 5x5 production for Sanchez, and for a 3.36 ERA or whatever that he's got now, it's been just an okay season.
Yep, I'm with you on that one. The other bit of news I wanted to mention is Jesus Luzardo officially said they will not throw. The Marlins said Jesus will not throw for 6 more weeks. So if anybody was holding on a glimmer of hope that Jesus would come back, that glimmer had just got shattered quicker than Rengifo's wrist. So you can throw that
too soon, man.
Yeah, what the hell? I cope with just that kind. That's how I cope.
So, that's your way of coping.
Yes. Sarcasm. Right. Sarcasm is my coping mechanism. So
whatever gets you through.
I need it. It's going to be a tough night of sleep tonight. So, but yeah, Jesus, you can drop them, folks. You can drop them very, very quickly on that one. All right. That'll wrap up most of our news. Like I said, Mason Miller's coming back Wednesday. Got some guys starting rehab assignments, and we'll get you caught up on a lot of that Thursday when we got some more clear cut news there for potential fab and whatnot. But Ryan, let's talk interactive bloom boards. This is always a fun one. We did it like a month ago, and now we'll do it again with a new 30-day kind of running situation.
All right, yeah. So I just pulled these up for the YouTube crowd, for the streaming crowd. This is, yeah, like you said, Bubba, an update from, I don't know, a month or two ago where we kind of debuted these, still don't know what the hell to call them, interactive live bloom boards that basically I've set up and update every day. And they're kind of just like dashboards of some of the recent trends that I think are important for hitters and pitchers. We have, and we'll run through it all tonight. We have a teams tab, which I find is always super useful looking at trends for teams, but also like stolen base trends, that sort of thing on our teams tab. And then a recent added like a yesterday top five, which is always kind of interesting to refresh each day and see who, you know, led the league in whiffs, who threw the most strikes, who had the hardest exit velos, that kind of stuff. So that's where we'll head tonight. We'll probably focus mostly just because it is dog days. And if you're not really paying attention all the time, at least speaking for myself, I lose track of recent trends, who's been pitching well, who's been pitching not. Maybe, you know, not in the case of Blake Snell, who's like our number one pitcher in every category here. But just kind of a good exercise to kind of go through and talk through certain guys. We won't certainly talk about every single one on these boards, but good to highlight the ones that that stand out to us. So the three pitching categories that we're looking at for last 30 days, strikeout minus walk, which is our, you know, our staple, the biggest improvers and the biggest faders in that. Same with called plus swinging strike rate. We'll give a little more context on that when we get to it. Pitchers who have changed their pitch mix the most over the last 30 days, along with those skills. And then on the hitter side, improvements in strikeout rate, exit velo and barrels over the last 30 days as well. So I will let you, my friend, drive the conversation and bring up who we want to bring up.
All right. Well, we'll start with the K to walk board. As you mentioned, we don't need to talk about Snellzilla because the dude is a monster, but I do want to talk about JP Sears, 20% K to walk over the last 30 days, market improvement. I know we mentioned him last week as a 2-start streamer, dominated the White Sox on Monday night. No small task as they picked up the win on Tuesday, but over his last like 6 starts, Sears got 5 wins. I mentioned the other day, that's a big plus for me. He's got 35 Ks and 36 and a third ERAs to Sierra's. Like, he's been much, much better and just a great floor pitcher with upside on a good A's team. So I wanted to bring up JP Sears, who markedly improved in the K to walk department.
Absolutely. Mostly the walk department.
Yes.
3% walk rate over his last few starts. And one of the things, especially with pitchers, like you definitely want to look at like the strength of schedule. Who has JP Sears faced in his last few outings? It's at Boston, who we'll talk about as at least for me a surprise team that is like the best offense in baseball over the last month. Then the Angels, Astros, at Giants and White Sox. So a pretty like, I don't know, marginal, I guess, schedule in terms of difficulty. But the key for Sears has been the control. No more than two walks in each of his last eight starts. 8 Ks, 4 Ks, 3 Ks, 9, then 5 against the White Sox last time out. So just a pretty good hot stretch from JP Sears. And if we boil this thing over to the pitch mix leaderboard, JP Sears does have a change in pitch mix to back that up. So that makes the skills, like whenever I see a change in skill over a certain month, like a lot of times it's just varying, especially for hitters. It's just hot streaks, cold streaks, whatever. But if you see a major uptick in K minus walk or control or whatever, and you've got a change in arsenal to kind of back that up, then you're starting to cook. Then you're starting to cook. Steven brings up a very good, and I should have brought this up at the top. What makes a good strikeout minus walk rate? So just for context, I think league average is about 14.
I got the cheat sheet right here if you want it. Go ahead. Average is 15.8. Above average is 18%. Elite is 24%.
Okay. And for starting pitchers, like I think anything over like, because that includes that. I mean, that's league wide, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's league wide. So I think if you're over 20%, I think you're rolling.
Yeah. Yeah. And Michael in the chat kind of gives a good benchmark. 18% solid, 20 good. Over 25 is obviously very good. So anything above 18 is great. Anything above that is gravy. So.
Yep. 100% with you on that one. Patrick Corbin baffles me. I really don't want to talk about Patrick Corbin, but the fact he's up here on this list is quite shocking to me. But you know, Hunter Green's been awesome. Logan Gilbert's been really good. Ryan Nelson striking out more, but still not great. Kikuchi's been here all along. Arrighetti had a big start. I want to go back to Sean Manaea here, who was phenomenal on Monday night against St. Louis. 7 shutout with 10 Ks. He's had 21 strikeouts in his last 2 starts. Manaea's been great. He's been a ratio darling. He's been getting you the K to walks, as you mentioned. He's getting wins. Like I love Sean Manaea, what he's doing. I was on him start the season. It's panning out quite well so far.
It is. And the big thing with Manaea, and I will kind of echo this with JP Sears, if I again scroll over to our pitch mix change guys, Sean Manaea has changed his pitch mix, tied for the most of any pitcher over the last 30 days. And the change for Manaea has been pretty marked in terms of the fastball. Manaea has basically ditched his sinker and traded that for a 4-seamer that he's throwing about a quarter of the time so far over the last month. And so, yeah, it's been awesome for Manaea. I don't think he's this good, but you ride it while you can. And again, if you get that change in arsenal to support an uptick in skills, I believe that uptick in skills is more likely to hold if you can see some kind of tangible change that's driving it.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive watching what he's doing right now. I want to bring up Ronel Blanco because this is a guy that got busted for the sticky stuff. He's doesn't feel like he's been as dominant. A couple 4-run starts in here. He's only going five-ish innings over his last 3. But the strikeouts have continued to be there. The walks have been iffy. Home runs are an issue for Blanco. So I guess the reason I'm bringing him up is we've been talking about all these guys that are dominating and doing well in Sears and Manaea. Let's talk about Blanco. So it's basically, I'm saying, is not all increased K-to-walks are created equal. It's kind of what I'm trying to get at. So he's striking more guys out, but is it really a benefit to the overall production he's bringing to, like, say, your fantasy team?
I mean, I think so. Like, I think even the first few months of the season, Ronel Blanco had a pretty mediocre strikeout rate, like in the low 20s. I believe league average for strikeout rate is right around there. So league average strikeout rate guy, but racked up a ton of whiffs. And I know the sticky stuff, whatever, but even after the sticky stuff ban, by month, 15% swing strike in June, 15 again in July. August is too small a sample, but missed a ton of bats in his only start in August. So I almost think this is like the uptick in K to walk is mostly driven for Blanco by an uptick in Ks. And whenever I see an uptick in strikeouts, I look to see what that whiff rate is. Is he missing bats to support the uptick in K's. And in Blanco's case, it's honestly, man, it's been there the entire season. The strikeout rate just hasn't caught up until basically the 4th of July, basically the last month of the season. So, I don't know. I mean, going forward with Blanco, like, I don't know what the hell to make of this. Like, he's old. He hasn't been good. But, like, this has been quietly a pretty good breakout season despite some shaky control for Blanco. It I don't know. The uptick in Ks is impressive and skill supported.
Yeah, it's interesting because since July 3rd, he's made 6 starts, 4.28 ERA with a 3.89 Sierra, which is good. Then you mentioned the K to walk. It's up to 19.1%, like 27% K rate. If you just kind of limited the walk some more, that'd be a beauty. So I agree. The production's there. I guess he just needs to limit the home runs. That's what's crushing him right now. But that's not what we're discussing here in K to walks. It's kind of the Brandon Pfaadt situation. If anybody looks at Brandon Pfaadt, if it's home runs, otherwise he's doing just fine as well. And yes, I had to throw him in to this conversation. Anybody else on the green side? Like, I skipped over a bunch because they seemed kind of, you know, Kikuchi, we've talked about it a million times. Just the underlying metrics are amazing with him, and he was great in his first start with Houston. But anything else, like, you can talk about Corbin if you want, but I really didn't want to.
No, I'd rather gouge my eyes out than talk about Patrick Corbin. I mean, we know who Patrick Corbin is, so I don't think we need to go there. I know we've talked about Kikuchi a bunch, but I think it's even worth driving home the fact more that, like, Houston paid up for Kikuchi, and we saw a major change in pitch mix for Kikuchi in his first start with the Astros. Pretty well documented. They want him throwing his excellent changeup even more, throwing a ton more sliders and doing it at the expense of his curveball and four seamer. So, like, I think, and I'm always the Yusei Kikuchi guy. I get it. I probably like him more than I should say. But I think he can do some things in Houston. I think Houston knows that they can, quote unquote, fix him. And the one start that we did see from Kikuchi looked like they could.
Yep, I agree with you. It could be an interesting spot for them. And the first start was a great representation. We'll see him again on Wednesday, see where things pan out there for when you say Kikuchi on that one. Let's go to the fallers, I guess, in this category. And let's just start with Zach Lidle. He's dropped six percentage points over the last month. His last 5 starts, 22 Ks to 7 walks over 28 and a third innings, 14 earned runs. He's been getting lit up like a Christmas tree in 2 out of the 3. 3 of the 4 starts, or 3 of the 5 starts, are actually pretty good. 2 total earned runs in those. But 2 starts, Yankees and Texas, got hit pretty good. So when you look at Zach Lidle's profile, like, how are we going about him? Because he feels like he's definitely just a streaming-only type option and maybe just a home stream based on things. But the strikeouts have started to dwindle.
And that's the problem. Is, like, even with a streamer, with Lidle, like, you still want to get Ks, and Lidle's not given that. Once you stop missing bats and don't get strikeouts, you're very much prone to whatever happens with contact, and in the summer months, that's not such a great thing. So Zach Lidle, big time drop in Ks, and, you know, and always has been kind of a big control guy, still has held that, but in the second half this year, 18% strikeout rate, like, that's not going to get it done. Even as a streamer, like, you stream the guy and you're getting, what, 3 or 4 strikeouts, and that just doesn't help.
Yeah, I'm going to mention a Christopher Sanchez Spider-Man gif here and Michael Wacha. Because I like to use him a lot for cheap in DFS. But when you look at Wacha since July 3rd, so 6 starts, maybe he only used 5 starts, but it's 3 earned runs or less. He's got 26 Ks in 35 innings, but the 12 walks kind of skew things. So he's got a good ERA. The whip's not as good as Christopher Sanchez, but he's got 4 wins, similar strikeout issues. So it's kind of an interesting spot with Wacha, a guy that I do like to promote as a stream in the right matchups. Like, he has a 2-star week this week, so he was worth a shot. But when you see an 8% K to walk, it doesn't leave you all warm and fuzzy.
Yeah, man, a little harsh on my guy Sanchez there.
I was referring to a guy that doesn't strike anybody out, but yeah.
I hear you. Do they have the same exact 20% K rate and low ERA? So I get it. I tend to think Sanchez's low ERA is more deserved because he has such a really good ground ball rate and the control is a lot better. But yeah, Wacha has lived for a couple years outpitching his skills. I don't think, especially as someone ages like that, like, I don't think that's something you can sustain. So, yeah, not a Waka fan, even in streamers. Like, I take, well, yeah, it's not a fair comp, but I take Ronel. We just talked about Ronel Blanc. Who would you take, Lytle or Waka?
Waka. I trust him to go out there and pretty much give me a good floor almost every time out and pick up a win, where Lytle's just volatile as I'll get up.
Okay. I get it.
All right, I'm going to bring up one of your guys from some other fab shows. Like, he's not your guy, like you roster him every single week, but a guy that you've been pretty excited about certain weeks this year, and that's Mitch Spence. And I bring him up because he's actually, his last three starts have been great against the Dodgers, Angels, and Angels. Scuffled against Philly, Baltimore got to him, and then the Angels again. So three out of the four good starts were the Angels. Grain of salt there. But 28 strikeouts to 15 walks over his last six starts. We talk about the drop-off here. He's down to an 8% K to walk, a 7% drop. But like, he's got the White Sox on Wednesday. So anybody listening to the show on a daily league, that's intriguing. Is Mitch Spence a guy that's on your radar, maybe stream only or anything else?
White Sox stream only, which is about as nice as you can say for someone who you don't really like anymore. So yeah, I have hyped Spence a couple times, but I think mostly that's just matchup based. And yeah, I'd throw him against the White Sox, but no, he's not. He doesn't. I mean, he's got like a decent slider, but it's basically cutter slider. That's his mix. And just, I don't know, the command isn't there. The K's haven't been there. It's he's streamer.
All right, let's talk about Andrew Heaney, because I know I got on him with
another
you,
one.
I'm not going to throw you under the bus on this because I rode him for a while too. Last start was good against Houston, still only 4 Ks, which is a bummer, but 6 good innings. Got beat up against St. Louis and Toronto, but prior to that was like 15, 16 straight starts of 3 runs less. Like absolute domination from Andrew Heaney. But what we've seen over the last month with Heaney, and maybe that's why the production's dropping, he's dropped 7% in his K to walk down to a 10% basically. Have you seen anything when looking at Heaney that concerns you as like, okay, we're getting back to the gas can, or is this kind of just, who knows, a blip on the radar type thing?
I hope just a blip. I hope not the gas can. Velocity's held strong. It's around 91 in each month throughout this season. So that's always one of the first things I look at. You know, if someone's struggling, is the velocity down? And for Heaney, that has stayed true. Control still looks good. The big thing with Heaney, it's been, he hasn't missed as many bats lately. Swing strike rate the first 3 months of the season, 13, 13, 15, and then now 12, 11, which is still like league average is around 11.5. So I don't know. I tend to think it's just a rough stretch for Heaney. The other thing I'd look at is workload. Heaney threw 147 innings last year. He's only at 115 this year. So I don't think it's really that either. I just think it's probably a cold streak and he'll go back to being decent again. I don't want to say, legendary, but Heaney, I think, should be fine. I wouldn't be too worried as long as you don't have too much scar tissue from previous Heaney seasons.
Yep, no, that's very, very fair. There's a lot of scar tissue from Heaney seasons. I want to hit up, I'm going to skip over Logan Webb. We've talked about him a ton. He's more of an accumulator. Any of the innings, we kind of know who he is. We've talked about Gossman a ton. He's a spot starter. He's not the usual guy. The velocity and whatnot, it's just been a mess with Gossman. I want to go all the way to the bottom, though, because you talked about him before the show, and he got the big dub for the White Sox on Tuesday night, and that's Jonathan Cannon. And this is a guy that I saw people taking prop bets on because he had such low prop numbers on Tuesday, which, kudos to you that took the chance there. On Tuesday, he threw six innings, 1 run, 2 walks, 5 Ks against the A's, which is pretty darn good against a good A's team. And then since July 7th, to be the last 30 days of this chart, Cannon has 14 strikeouts to 11 walks. Thus, the 2% K to walk. So what are we thinking with Jonathan Cannon? Because a long-winded way of saying people are excited about him, but things are falling apart, it seems like. And I told you, I watched the start. He's lucky he only walked 2.
That's somewhat, comforting for my weekly DFS that I play in Tout Wars. I streamed again. I stacked against Cannon because
The 2 rainouts, which was good.
I did avoid the 2 rainouts, and I did not check the weather. I still don't do that. I refuse. But I probably should have. I mean, maybe a rainout might have been better than some of the A's that went against Cannon. I don't know. Cannon, dude, like, it. Yeah, it's been so bad lately. And obviously the win potential, even though we did get a win tonight on the White Sox, is – is really bad. So I don't know. It was a good stretch to start the season for Cannon. It's really fallen apart in July. Not even the K to walk, but just like not throwing strikes, 38% ball rate, single digit swinging strikes. I was just not missing bats, not throwing strikes, tends to lead to bad results, despite the tightrope act from Cannon this evening.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't get too excited about that. I actually dropped him in most of my leagues over the last couple of weeks. So you're welcome for those that kept him. But it's been bleak out there. He's been on my bench, so he was a drop. Let's talk CSW real quick over the last 30 days, like Blake Snell, obviously. Carlos Rodon's been picking things up, Ryan. Are we jumping back on the Carlos Rodon train? I think we should be, but there's still always that banana peel just kind of feels like it's waiting out there for Carlos Rodon. He's been very, very good as the season's gone on.
Oh, he's been great lately, and a pitch mix change to back that up as well. Real quick on CSW, what that is called plus swinging strikes. So, and the rate for that. So it's, again, it's your good strikes. It's not just, you know, foul balls and guys fouling people off. It's called strikes, swinging strikes. The league average on CSW is 28.5%. So basically anyone, and Bubba, you mentioned it all the time on the first pitch pod, when you're kind of analyzing a single game, it's great for that. Anybody in the 30s is right. Like awesome. Really good. So,
yeah. For anybody curious, I think I have, right here. 30% or higher is elite. 28.5 is above average. 27.5 is average. So it's really tight when you're talking CSW.
Yeah. And what's Rodon lately? 33. That is,
That's elite.
So from 28 to 33. So from an average guy to a really elite pitcher over the last month. I think Rodon is primed to finish pretty strong. Get a ton of run support with the Yankees. I think this is legit for the final 2 months of the season, even though the ERA, surface ERA over the last month has been, I think, like really bad. It was really bad. I think it's gotten a little better lately.
It's gotten better, but yeah, it's been a rocky road, to say the least, for Carlos Rodon. I want to mention Brian Bello, because he's upped at 3% to 32% over the last 30 days. That is elite. Went from basically above average to an elite CSW guy, but it's always one that kind of makes me wonder, because you look over his last six starts since July 3rd, he's got a 4.29 ERA when you look at Brian Bello. A 3.45 Sierra, though, it's very good, and a 19.7% K to walk. So that's all pretty fine and dandy. But the 39 Ks and 35 and 2/3 is awesome. A lot of that came thanks to Seattle, but he got it the Dodgers, got the A's. It feels like it's every start, it's like three runs at least. So you're hoping for a quality start with a bunch of strikeouts with Bello, which is better than the way the season started, but he's not dominating is what I'm trying to get at.
Even tonight was another, three earned runs, and I think left 4-2, got the old 4 2/3 removed before he could get the win against
Kansas City.
I want to say Kansas City, yeah.
Yep, six more Ks though. That'll do it.
Yeah. No, six more Ks. And the big thing for me with Bello is, that jump in Ks, again, supported by a jump and miss bat. So I'm led to believe that Bello is a strikeout guy. Like, I think that uptick in strikeouts could stick. And as we'll get to when we talk to Boston, like, again, should get plenty of run support there. The big thing, like, Bello entering the season, it was all about the changeup as his kind of his top pitch. And it has been. But he's faded the changeup usage quite a bit since June, replaced that with more sliders recently. So that's an interesting transgression, kind of going somewhat away from your best pitch and replacing it with a slider, which has been decent, like a 15% whiff rate on it, which is pretty good. But I think it's just something to, like, now you go from kind of a, he wasn't purely a two pitch guy, but now you have a much more rounded arsenal, 40% sinkers, 30 sliders and 30% changeups. So that's probably just giving hitters something else to think about over the last couple months.
Yep. I'm with you on that. It's much more intriguing. It's a guy I've always been interested in. So hopefully he figures it out. I remember they gave him a couple extra days rest earlier this year to kind of work on things. And since then it's been a much better pitcher. Patrick Corbin's on this list back up to 28%. And so I opened his page. And since July 5th, he's made six starts. He's got a 7.03 ERA, 25 earned runs over 32 innings. But he has a 3.74 Sierra. And I'm not saying that's the end-all, be-all, but that's a massive split. and he's got that over 16% K to walk over the last basically month of action. I still don't think I can buy into him, but the fact that his underlying metrics suggests he should be a lot better than he is kind of tilting.
Also tilting is rostering Patrick Corbin. Yes. I'm trying not to be flippant, but like, I don't know.
Yeah, I had to open his page. Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's worth checking out just to see if there's like changes and whatnot. But like a couple things with Corbin is just like, yes, he's an improver, but he improved from bad to league average, right? From 25 to 28% CSW. And I mean, just pitchers, you know, if you have a 4 ERA all season, it's not a 4 ERA every single start. There are hot streaks, there are cold streaks. I just think we know who Corbin is, and it's been a decent run, but I don't see it. I don't see it. And the time you pick him up and start him, it's going to be
it'll be a disaster. I'm with you there. On the flip side,
would you roll Corbin Angels?
Is Kevin, like for DFS, I think you would, because it'll be like $6,000, so it'll be cheap as heck. So I could see the appeal there. That Angels team is booty, which means they'll probably score 8 runs, like you're saying. But like Taylor Ward's on the paternity list right now, so if he can get them with Ward out, and you basically have to worry about Pilar I just totally blanked on Adele. If that's your biggest concerns, and I might take my chances. So yeah, it's there. All right. On the flip side of it, though, you know, there's Gossman again. Reagans has dropped off. He's been an interesting case. Actually got hit around his last start. We'll see how he does on Wednesday. Hunter Brown, we think we talked about it even last time. We've seen this slow decline after that amazing run from Hunter Brown. Still pitching well, had a good start on Monday, which was nice to see. But he went from just being like dominating for over a month, easy, like almost 2 months, to now he's kind of back to being a league average pitcher, it feels like, with Hunter Brown. So any thoughts on him?
It's like a literal, you look at Hunter Brown's like K to walk by month this year. It's like a straight up pyramid. It's like, so in April, 7, then 17, then 23, like elite in June. And then after that in July, 16, and then at least one start in August, back down to 9. It's, dude, pitchers are roller coasters, man. Yeah. I don't know. I still don't know how to feel about our Pablo Lopez, Hunter Brown second half beer bet. They were both looking pretty good, like right at the start of the second half, and then I don't know.
It's basically who can puff their chest across the finish line at the 100 meter, pretty much, is how this one's about to go. So
yeah, exactly.
It's going to be a wild one, to say the least. Going to skip over Mikolas. It's almost like talking about Patrick Corbin, it feels like. Jonathan Cannon, you hit on already. Chris Flexen. There's Heaney. Cabrera's on this list because he walks the world, but also like still a 30% KSW or CSW is still very good. So that's still elite, but he dropped from 34%. And you got Gibson and Kramer. So anybody else on the fallers that you'd like to discuss?
No, not really. Not really. The one like one faller, one K to walk faller that we didn't talk about was just was interesting to me was Zach Gallen. I know he's not on the CSW list, but Gallen has been a much worse pitcher since he came back from the IL with a hamstring injury. And that's another thing with these boards is to look at, is there some type of like event? We talked about pitch mix change, that sort of thing, but is there an injury or you know, did they on the hitter side, did they get hit and miss a game? And since then it's been bad. There's some type of change or event that has perhaps caused this change in skill.
All right, let's talk about pitch mix changes real quick here. Ryan Nelson leads the way, which that's very telling, or he's tied for the lead with a 38 score change, 26.5% CSW with a 19.3% K to walk. And, you know, he's given 4 runs in 2 of his 6 starts, but 3 earned runs or less than the rest. We've seen the strikeouts improve. He's got that awesome nickname that you like so much and some other fun stuff like that. So are we buying into this with Ryan Nelson?
Nelly Nasty, as the D-backs call him. I'm not. No, he still can't miss bats. He's got decent control, but like this just screams streamer to me. Sierra in the mid-3s. I don't know.
All right, then I'll let you pick before we go to hitters here, because we talked about a lot of these guys. They've run the other boards. Some are not, obviously. Are there any pitch mix guys that stand out to you that are worth like really going, wow, this is someone to buy into? Because obviously Kikuchi, Snell, Gilbert, Pivetta, your big greenies are kind of guys that we know. But if you want to discuss them, you can. But anybody that stands out to you of a guy that is worth paying more attention to.
No, I mean, we talked about Kikuchi. I mean, we didn't talk about Snell, but everyone kind of knows about Snell. With Snell, it's the curveball. For whatever reason, I don't know why, the curveball is his best pitch, and Snell didn't really throw it that much his first few starts with the Giants, and that's been the big pitch mix change for Snell.
I don't think he was ready. Like he's talked about how he got rushed faster than he wanted to be. I don't think he ever felt comfortable until now. So we'll see.
That, I mean, that would check out.
Like he was very, before he came back this last time when he was in AAA, he forced them to let him stay for another start in the minors. Like, and he voiced how frustrated he was for how fast they kept pushing him up. So, yeah, I think there might be something to why he was the way he was. But then again, that's his, well, that's not just his fault, but it's the system's fault for making him miss spring training, essentially. All right, let's talk about the hitters side of things on this one. K percentage over the last 30 days, got some big droppers. Not sure we wanted to really discuss Trent Grisham, but but guys like Brent Rooker has been a beast. I want to hit on Jackson Chourio because this is a guy I've been loving for DFS. I've been trying to bring him up more often on first pitch because people kind of wrote him off, right? Like, he's platooning now. He's not really going to do much. But, man, if you go back, I'm going to go to July 1st. I know it's a little longer than what you got going here. But dude's hitting .323 with three homers, five stolen bases, striking out less than 15%. We've seen a massive improvement. He's leading off a ton for Milwaukee now, which is huge. This is kind of those things we say with young players. Sometimes they get sent to the minors to learn. The Brewers let them learn at the big league level, and I think they're going to get paid off. And, like, I'm really curious to see where his ADP is next year, to be honest. But for this point, what do you think with Jackson Chourio, who dropped his K percentage down to 13% over the last 30 days, which is outstanding?
It is. And so since the last show that we did this, I added the exit velocity the last 30 days as well. Then kind of 90th percentile, because I'm it's interesting to see strikeout rate guys, but I also want to see if they're hitting the ball hard. And that's why we
it doesn't correlate. Yeah.
Right. So in Churio's case, to go from 24 down to 13%, I mean, league average K rate's like 22, to go to 13% has just been incredible. And he's still making the hard contact, that 107 mile an hour exit velocity, the 90th percentile league average on that's like 104. So still hitting the crap out of the ball, and still, we forget this, Jackson Chourio is still so 20 young. Years old, man. Like, that's, for me, that's the biggest thing, is the book is kind of now out on Jackson Chourio, what he likes, what he doesn't, where to pitch him in the zone. We have that data in the majors for Chourio, and he has adjusted to that adjustment. And this is what we're seeing from Jackson Chourio, recently. It's damn impressive to see, and I agree, man. Like, we'll find out, I guess, pretty soon when we do our first 2025 draft where Jackson Chourio will go. I mean, to put a number to it, so it Churio's preseason ADP was 130. Would you take the early or the later on that for 2025?
I think he goes earlier than that, and I don't know if I can draft him that early.
I think he goes earlier too. I just think this is, like, even though the year-to-date stat line, which still is tracking for over a 15-15 season with above, above average
for 20 years old, is awesome.
Like, this could absolutely take off. I think the ADP will be top 100.
So maybe I should reevaluate that. That's always the fun part about doing these drafts so early, is like, once I get to sit down in November and December and we talk about stuff, like when we start reviewing positions, all of a sudden, like, my mind will start changing. Like, well, maybe I should look differently upon X, Y, and Z and make a new mascot type thing. And that's where it's on my brain, where Chourio all of a sudden might actually be worth that top, 100-ish pick for me type situation. All right, Pete Armstrong's on the list, a name we've talked about a lot, but I keep saying, like, the average, it's a stolen base guy with, you hope he gets hot with the average, but he's improved the strikeout rate and he's hitting for a decent, almost average EV90. So any quick thoughts on the PCA?
Not really. I think that two homer game, that like legendary two homer game the Sunday before the All-Star break is still in this sample. So once that flushes out from the last 30 days, Pico Armstrong has hit one home run outside of that one game in 225 plate appearances. This is like just your typical one trick pony, steals only type of guy.
100%. Seth Brown's a good one here, because I know he was a popular stream because all the right-handed pitchers the A's faced this week. But over the last month, he's dropped his K rate to 23%, which is outstanding for Seth Brown because he's always had a ton of power. And it showcases in the EV90 that you have here since July 1st, 304, five home runs, and he's a platoon guy. So that's tremendous. Mm-hmm. But when he does play, it's like fifth or sixth against righties. So I do like Seth Brown. It's cool to see it correlate here.
One of the many A's I named on the last show after dumping on the entire team and saying I'd fad this guy, I'd fad that guy. Seth Brown was one of them. I think Seth Brown's been good in the majors before, and it's been a down year. He's been in AAA for most of the season, but Seth Brown is someone who has, you know, some talent, baseline level of talent that is certainly rosterable in the majors. Nice to see him come back to that. I'm sure we'll cover him on our fab, depending how many right-handed pitchers Oakland faces next week. But Seth Brown, when Oakland faces four or more in a week, I think is absolutely streamable. This is someone who's done it before and is showing that again. He's not that old.
No, he's not. He's young and he's getting the playing time. He was injured a lot earlier this year too. So that it's a nice little, hopefully, like he was at one point, it felt like a 30-15 type guy, like if you streamed him right. So there was some production there.
Seth Brown was, he had two seasons in a row, 20 plus homers, 21 and 22. In 2022, he had 25 homers and 11 steals.
Yep. So, not a bad streaming type option for sure. Swanson's good here, but if you look at the stat line, it still sucks. So that's good. glad I dropped him a while ago. I just want to give a shout out to Xander Bogaerts. The dude got a 10% K rate, and he is just a batting average machine, but there's like zero power there. There's like zero power right now. I used to joke, like, okay, you get a good average, you get like 20 home runs, and that's about it. Now you're just getting a good average. He scores a bunch of runs in that offense, but he ain't doing a whole lot else right now. But the average is a nice asset, I'll say that much.
Yeah, it is tough to see, even though, as a riser or whatever, five homers, six steals, and 268 plate appearances, it's, I don't know. This is like very much a high risk of someone being an empty batting average for the remainder of his deal in San Diego, which I mean isn't like the worst thing. It's a good lineup, and like you said, if you can hit for batting average, you play every single day, that can work. It's just Xander Bogaerts is kind of a compiler now, and he needs to rack up 600, 650 plus, and not break his shoulder again next season to at least have a remote shot at returning his value. Yeah.
And let's remember, it felt like when he got hurt, he was out for the season. Then he came back like in a month and a half. So something tells you the shoulder still might not be there for the power department.
Could be
an option as well. The fallers side of things here. I won't mention the first name out of courtesy to my co-host here, just because I'm a nice guy like that. I'm just going to jump straight to Willy Adames, because he went from a 22 to a 36% strikeout guy. We've talked about him before, maybe even on the first half. He was like super, he wasn't as aggressive, is the best way I'll put it, early on in the season. And now he's getting more aggressive because he's striking out a ton, but like he double donged on Tuesday night. Since July 1st, almost hitting 300. If you count today's game, over 300. He's got six home runs now. Like the dude is looking like the Willie we saw a few years ago that many wished we had last year. So this is one where I wanted to point out that sometimes striking out more it could be a hindrance is not always the end all be all.
And that, I mean, exactly. I agree. I think, and that's like basically what I was going to say before you kind of said all that, is like, this is kind of who you expect a low batting average with Willy Adames. And high K rates can absolutely work. A 36% strikeout rate over the last month. That's
scary.
That's bad. But I also just think that's a peak. This isn't a 36% K rate guy. And that's what you have to, especially with hitters, you have to take it with a grain of salt that we are just looking at a 30 day sample. Willy Adames, like you mentioned, the double dong tonight, Bubba, he will be at 19 homers, 12 steals in less than 500 plate appearances. Like that is really good and a nice rebound for Willy Adames. So, yes, I'd like to see a lower than, you like to see that K rate back in the 20s on the season for Willy Adames. I believe it's right around there. And if he can live there, that's fine, given the power of speed that he gives.
And it's just one thing I've been trying to like harp for a long time is, yes, the Javi Baez profile will eventually come to an end, and you just got to kind of be ready to jump ship when that happens. But I think as the era changes or we start wanting more and more home runs, we're seeing a lot of guys strike out more than usual. That's like, I think we have to change our mindset to these things. Like Tyler Fitzgerald, yes, he strikes out a ton and he's going to not be this good the whole season, but he could still be a 275 guy with power. Like that's still pretty good.
Well, yeah, so like I think we the whole yeah, Ellie like De La Cruz thing. Like that's
bingo. Bingo. Yep. I think we have to like kind of tone it back a little bit because for years it was like, oh, this guy strikes out like over 26% or whatever. Like, nope, you can't roll. Like it's just, it's going to crush you, this, that, and the other. And I think we got to kind of back off that one quite a bit. Unless your name's Will Smith, who has increased to a 34% K rate over the last month. And my God, since July 1st, Will Smith's hitting a .188 with four home runs. Are you looking at a stat sheet by chance?
I've got it up. Yeah.
Okay. Darn. I was going to say,
quiz me.
I was going to quiz you just for fun. Hitting cleanup basically for the Dodgers. You know how many RBIs he's had since July 1st?
Oh, no, I don't have that up.
Yeah.
How many RBI does Will Smith hit?
He's got four home runs and hitting 188.
Since July 1st, so last 30 plus days, I'll go eight RBI.
Very close. It's seven. So This is a guy that was drafted as one of the top five catchers. He's probably, no one's even thinking about benching him. And he is destroying your fantasy teams over the last month. Like, not even just treading water. Bo Naylor has been better. Bo Naylor has hit 212 over the last month with, like, four home runs and a couple steals. He's been better than Will Smith. That's how bad Will Smith's been.
Which raises the question, can a catcher be a Gene Segura All-Star?
He is a Gene Segura. I might write a column for my Substack, just like the Gene Segura. That should be like a monthly column at the end of each month. Who is your Gene Segura's from July? There you go. Yeah. Wake up, people.
I will shout out Michael Cecchini, one of our loyal listeners, did that last month, and it came out fantastic. Wrote a Gene Segura All-Star piece for just guys who are doing nothing in your lineup. Will Smith absolutely is that. I'll give a shout out to Scott Genstad of the RotoWire podcast. He tweeted, I think said on the show as well, the monthly batting average for Will Smith.
Yeah.
Dude hit .337 in April. And it's just so interesting how, like, yeah, Michael says it there. It's so interesting how that hot April, like, totally shifts your mindset on how a player is doing in a lot of cases. And Will Smith is that. Since that .337 batting average, it's been .212 in May, .203 June, .208 in July, and a nice .077 in August through 13
first at-bats. Three games. Holy crap. That's like literally, you're not going to see people drop Will Smith, but I wouldn't critique it right about now. He is doing you no good. Like, he is hurting your team.
I wouldn't drop him. He's better. He's good. I think he's still good. It's just a bad stretch.
You can't start him right now. You can't start him right. A bad stretch. It's 4 months. What are you waiting for?
I don't know. Cleanup Dodgers. Someone who has. So now I start to get defensive here. No, you start Will Smith in two catcher leagues. You're crazy, man.
I don't know. I think this is gonna be a fun discussion.
What about Will Smith or whoever the hell we were talking about earlier filling in for Gabriel Moreno?
If he plays at least 50%, I'd at least give him a shot right now. He's got a pulse. Will Smith seems like he's dead at the plate. If you give me 1 second, I'm gonna pull up the available catchers. Like, we're gonna have a discussion right here. This is happening on the show. So in 12 team OCs.
Is this a beer bet coming up?
Potentially, yes. This is where I'm going with this. So I pulled up catchers and OCs because Will Smith is 100% rostered, by the way. If you want his full stat line, he's hitting .249 on the season because of that first half still.
That's good.
But it's good until he crushed you. But let's just do 50% or less rostered. Freddie Fermin, probably not. I'll take Travis d'Arnaud over him right now.
No, I'm not signing up for that.
Travis d'Arnaud's hitting .264 with 11 home runs and like half the plate appearances. So
yeah, no, I agree with you.
Yeah,
keep going. We need a good bet.
Yeah, I'm not going Alejandro Kirk. I'm not there. Kyle Higashioka is interesting. .227 with 13 homers. That's closer. Joey Bart's interesting as well.
I'll give you either of those two. Your choice, either Higgy Bart versus Will Smith.
That's tough. Can I combine them?
No,
I'm joking.
That's my point.
How about this? He's 74% rostered. Can I take Austin Wells?
I'll give it to you. That's a good, fair rest of season. So what do we got? It's August 6th.
And because Jose Trevino's starting to rehab pretty soon, so this could really backfire in my face. But
hey, you can go back to Joey Bart, or
I like Travis Darno, but you won't give me him because you're scared.
Darno's he's been good.
Yeah, I know. That's my point. He's like 36% rostered compared to 100%.
That was Austin Wells. August
6th.
Which we may not be able to do. I'll just say August, but
just say second half.
No.
Look at Kevin Hasty to the chat. Yes, catchers. Here we go. You got me fired up.
I am not giving you the last month of Austin Wells versus Will Smith. Okay.
Just pick August, whatever August, makes it easier for you to figure out.
Rest of season. Yeah. August 6th, yeah. Will Smith versus Austin Wells. I like it. That's good. Yep. I feel I like Austin Wells, but
he's just been so bad, so incredibly bad right now.
We've got some support here. Ryan, Will Smith is 70th at catcher last 30 days. You may want to back out.
Yeah. I know. Hey, I warned him, guys. He said it's a cold streak. It's 4 months.
This is similar hate to when I got Jack Flaherty. So I'll hold my ground here.
I was willing to listen to Jack Flaherty. Yeah, this is a no-go zone right here. I'm looking forward to this one.
We will revisit our bets at the end of the season for sure.
We will for sure. There's no doubting that. Anybody else on this list here, like Blackman, Jake Cave, who goes deep when you don't want him to. Ben Rice is horrific. I tell people to drop
him. Yeah, Rice. Yeah, that's the one.
That Rice is cooked, folks. So you can definitely move on from that one.
Still, you're right.
That's burnt rice.
So you wouldn't do a Will Smith versus Ben Rice?
I don't want either one of them. Drop them both. Wow. Burn them both to the ground. All right. Let's move on before I start having too much fun with catchers here. Let's go to the EV90 over the last 30 days. And this is a good one because I actually discussed him in a recent Risers column. Geraldo Perdomo has been a fun one. He's over the last 30 days, you got Perdomo up to a 102, which is a close to league average. As you mentioned, you said league average is like 104, give or take. But he came off the IL lately. We know he's not a massive power guy, but batting average, he is providing that in spades of late. And since July 1st, we have a Geraldo Perdomo that's hitting 284, 21 runs, 13 RBIs, 3 stolen bases. Really picked it up of late. So what's your thoughts on Perdomo?
I'm not that in on him. So what this EV90 is, again, just to kind of take a quick step back, EV90 is your 90th percentile exit velocity. So it's if you hit 10 balls in play, what was that ninth hardest hit ball? It's a pretty good proxy for power in small samples, while also not relying on just like your absolute max. So that's what this is. Yeah, league average is 104.5. Geraldo Perdomo went from awful, which is 98, up to 102, which is still below average. So I just think, like, I don't know, man. This is at best an empty batting average guy who, I mean, I don't think he runs either, does he? I think.
Yeah, he got three steals this month, but yeah. He's not a dramatic still on base guy, but he's better than I think people give him credit for.
You're right. He had 16 bags last year, 3 this year, Perdomo. But I just mostly I don't know. Mostly think he's an empty batting average guy, like useful in weeks where the Diamondbacks have a bunch of games and that sort of thing. But outside of that, nice improvements, but I don't know.
Are you in on the Mitch Haniger improvements?
No, I'm not either.
Yeah, neither am I. Tovar improving is nice because he was slumping for a bit there. Jackson Churio on this list as well, which is great to see. Masataka Yoshida is a fun one because I know we've talked about him on recent weeks for Fab, and he's finally been picked up pretty much everywhere. But for a while there, people are hesitant because of the platoon situations. Two more hits on Tuesday, another home run on Tuesday. And since July 1st, you got Yoshida hitting 320, 3 home runs. That was entering Tuesday, so that's not counting the 2-for-4 night. 15% K rate. Dude's been beasting out right now.
He has. That's the one who I think jumps out the most for me in terms of like risers. Jackson Churio is on this list as well. So Churio aside, Yoshida has gone from basically league average power, which is for him is actually pretty good, through July to a 107. which is really good power. And the biggest thing with Yoshida, I've got the strikeout rate. So over the last 30 days, so it's not only are you hitting the ball harder, but in Yoshida's case, 12% K rate is elite. So this is someone, yeah, like we've talked about how bad Yoshida was at the beginning of the season, widely rostered, like you said. So kind of the ship has sailed, but Yoshida is quietly turning things around. I feel like this is someone we'll be talking about this off season. Given how well he has finished and how well the skills support it. With, if you look at the season long line, people are going to be disappointed. I think that draft cost is going to be pretty damn low. As long as the playing time's there next year, I think I'll like him.
Yep, I'm with you on that one for sure. Eugenio Suarez is another nice improver here. I remember when he first started hitting well, we're like, stream him until the wheels fall off. And the wheels haven't fallen off. 10 home runs, 317 average in July. Strikeout rate has dropped. Like, his contact has been much better. Again, it could end at any moment, but we're seeing a much better just approach at the plate from Eugenio Suarez of late. And that makes me feel like this could be a little more sustainable than I originally thought. And I'm kind of glad I took a couple dollar pickups on him at one point.
Yep. I think we know who Eugenio Suarez is at this point. We the power is going to be there. Curate hasn't been that bad in this recent, kind of hot stretch of power surge. So I agree. That Suarez, like, over the last month, I think that's probably the best month we'll see from him this season, but certainly won't. I don't think we'll see those lows that we saw in the first half again. So Suarez is, he's that plus power guy with a low batting average. Like, that's who he is at this point.
Yep. I'm with you there. Not too much else here. You got Rendon, who's Rendon. Loper Fido has been just a massive disappointment. It's good he's on the chart, but it's been a rough go there.
Like, look at his 40, K rate, the 40% strikeout rate for Loper Fido. Like, you can't, that is, as we like to say in the show, medium rare red. Yes. You don't want that.
You do not want that. The fallers on this side of things, our boy Jesus Sanchez, still hitting 480 foot dongs, though. So do what you wish with that one. Yeah. Connor Wong, who I like, and Uncle Ted mentioned. Taylor Ward's been, heating up again, but then cools down again, so that's a mess. Kevin Biggio got DFA'd. Anybody on this list you want to discuss? Because it's like, I see the good in some of these guys, and then some of them just like, yeah, not so much.
Yeah, no, I'm not seeing much. Like, so what I would typically look at here is, guys who have fallen in terms of the raw power, but also have a high strikeout rate. And really, for this month, it's Taylor Ward, Kevin Biggio, and Ryan McMahon, either DFA'd or like well-established guys who I think, we know who they are. And I think that for me, that's probably the biggest takeaway with these sheets is I'm much more willing to put stock in big changes like this for like a Jackson Churio for a young guy than I am a Ryan McMahon. Like, Ryan McMahon, we know who he is. He's going to go through hot streak. Even like Eugenio Suarez, who we just talked about, I try not. I think if you react to month-to-month samples like that for hitters, you're overreacting and just kind of you ride it out with these guys. But for the young guys, I do take a bunch of stock in it. But I don't see any noteworthy fallers that I'm even more concerned about than I was before.
All right, we'll take a quick glance at the barrels. Like, you got Soto, Rooker, Otani, Judge. Okay, cool. Yeah. Raleigh's been a beast. Vladdy's been awesome. Like, I eat all my words on that one. He's been great on the second half. If he could just even get less ground balls, it'd be even more amazing. Seager, Ozuna, Matt Wallner, he's 12 barrels over the last 30 days. That's fun in a platoon role. I don't have a whole lot on the green side of things. Do you have anybody you really want to talk about there?
No, I'm trying to squint. I thought that looked like it said Joey Gallo to me, but oh no, it's Matt Wallner. Okay. Yep. I think they're kind of the same guy, but
yep. Yeah. Same guy. The fallers though, Nimmo, who was red hot for a while, he's got 5 barrels, dropped to an 11% barrel rate on the season. Juan Yepez, who I think I didn't expect a ton of power from him anyways. We thought average and whatnot. He's kind of been that guy. But I want to hit on a couple here. Steven Kwan keeps hitting home runs with no barrels, which is cool. Isak Paredes down to 2 barrels. Now going to Wrigley. We kind of discussed that on the trade thing. That's going to potentially hurt him. Lane Thomas, 2 barrels, and they've seen the lefty-righty splits have become dramatic. Like, you could almost sit him versus right-handed pitchers right now, which is crazy. And then you got Edwards and Horner. Edwards, you don't match much power, and Horner basically justifying why I said you could cut him. What are your thoughts on the fallers side of things?
Paredes, well, he homered off Pablo Lopez tonight, which That was great. He's just, yeah, that classic kind of pull fly ball guy who doesn't rely on barrels. Even in Wrigley, we're more concerned about. We talked about that at the trade deadline. I guess I'll throw some cold water on Xavier Edwards.
Yeah.
It's no barrels over the last month during this absolute heater when Edwards is hitting. What's he hitting over the last month? Like, I think over 440.
I'll get it for you right now. It's because he's got one home run. I know that for a fact because it came out hit for nowhere. The cycle. Yep. He's hit since July 1st, 396, one homer, 18 runs, 12 steals.
Yeah.
Do you want to know what his biggest problem is? A 51% ground ball rate.
But honestly, for him, I don't know if that. I think that's what he should be doing.
No, but I mean, when you're talking barrels, though, that's going to hinder a lot of it.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. That's true. It's actually literally impossible to have a ground ball barrel by the definition of the stat. A barrel is something is a hard hit ball that's basically a line drive or like a low fly ball. So I get it. I don't know. It's easy for me to sit here and say he's not going to stay a 400 hitter or whatever Xavier Edwards is, but I'd like to see some power, because if we're looking at Edwards for 2025, like, a perfect comp is the guy right below him on this list, Nico Hoerner.
Yep.
And you can see you get the highs with that with Nico what we saw last year, but you also, what Nico is doing this season is also part of the equation as well.
I think, though, like, the difference for me in that regard is, like, I expect Hoerner to hit like 10 to 15 home runs, where I don't expect Edwards to do that. If that makes sense. Okay. Like, I'm not taking Edwards to be that guy.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. It makes sense. It's just really hard to, I mean, we can throw out names of guys who you don't expect any home runs from over the last few years, and it hasn't worked out. Like these Malik Smiths, the Lino DeShields Jr., et cetera. Yeah. John Birdie, I mean, the same team. And this is kind of like a Birdian run from Xavier Edwards. I don't know. I worry. Maybe I'm being too harsh on a guy who is 24 years old. But I don't know. Zero barrels the last month is not encouraging.
Yeah, I'm just looking at his numbers. Yeah, it's a 27% hard hit rate on the season. It's not 333 XWO Bacon is at least, you know, serviceable. Still not great by any means, but... Yeah, I'm not expecting like 2.1% barrel rate. I ain't gonna cut it on the season, but StatCast page. It's a lot of like blah red. There's not a lot of bright red on that page. That's for sure. Anybody else on the Fallers side of things?
Just quick shout out to Marcus Semien, who has quietly been quite terrible, hitting .244 this year, three bags, 16 home runs, and 500 plate appearances. He's compiling plate appearances, not compiling much else.
Yeah, that's almost droppable right now.
I know. Four barrels over the last month for Marcus Semien, so he's not trending well either.
With like 7 weeks left, 8 weeks left, whatever we technically have here, like, I've just become much more like, you know what, if you're not doing it, I'm cutting you and taking the hot hand for now. Like, I'm just over it. We're at that point of the year where it's just a lot. Like, I might regret it, but I'll take my chances at this point in time. So,
and quite honestly, we're fooling ourselves if we think we can project anyone over a 2 month sample. Like, just go for the playing time, and who's going, and go for it.
That's kind of where I'm at right now. If the guy picks it up, kudos, knock yourself out. Good on you, bro. But all right, that'll wrap up this version of the live leaderboards. I love these things; they're pretty darn awesome. We didn't even get to the teams. We kind of ran out of time on this one. Maybe we'll break that down at another time. But Ryan's always adding stuff to the pages, which is really, really cool. A lot of fun stuff here. Stuff we'll keep tinkering with this season, the off season, and much more on good old Bubba in the Bloom here. But let's take a couple. We have like listener questions / comments from the day here. So let me pull these up real
quick. Like condolences.
Yeah, a lot of those. I didn't photo all those ones. So thank you again to all that did. But Anthony Gialdi had my mind spinning, and Ryan and I talked a little off air about this, but Anthony Gialdi says, is there a substitute mascot for the remainder of 2024? We can't go 2 months without one. First, too soon. Second, we will come up with one once we can grieve and get through the process here. Either Ryan and I'll figure it out, or we might throw like four nominations out for the the listeners to decide who our mascot is. We're trying to figure that out, but it's a little too soon for us right now.
Give us a couple days, but we have a couple ideas. I think even in the chat earlier was Jesus Sanchez coming up there. Yeah. We'll see. But yeah, what did you say earlier? But the body's still warm.
Yeah, the body's still warm. Yeah, the body hasn't even got cold yet. Let time pass here, buddy.
Let's give our guy a couple of days for memorializing.
The stitch has just got put in. Let's just like take a breather on this one, guys. He's still probably high on Vicodin as we speak. Leave the boy alone. All right. Rand Simon says, who do you think replaces Birdsong in the rotation? They have such an easy schedule coming up and I need wins. No one's replacing Birdsong from the rotation right now. He got blown up.
I think we do need a, since we did collectively pump Birdsong. He got nuked today. What was it? 7-8 runs in 2 innings.
It was brutal. It was brutal. I will say, and I started him everywhere that I had him, so I'm there.
I picked him up in our listener league and started him. So,
but he's young. Young pitchers, this will happen to. This is just the reality of the game. First start in 15 days because the Giants. Yes, they kept him close by, but they didn't start him in the minors, and that's like you got to keep these guys throwing and doing their things. They're creatures of habits, and that kind of bugs me a bit too. Now let's see how he does this weekend. Another fun start coming up. See how that goes. But Birdsong has been great every other start he's thrown except this one. Like, let's take a breather, take a step back, and see where it goes. Because the Giants ain't replacing him because they have no one to replace him with. So, it's Birdsong's role. All right. The last little nugget I have here is from Gialdi as well. Well, he just suggests, let's have a Bubba in the Bloom auction championship next year. $150 DC auction and $150 Fab auction. Combo score of the two, like Champions League, but no 12-team and auction only. He wants it to be the year of the auction. We'll take a step back, but maybe we'll do something fun. We'll see. We'll see where that goes.
Absolutely. The more auctions, the better, even though my auction teams have sucked, but they're so
it's still the way to go. So much fun. It's absolutely amazing. But on that note, Ryan, we will wrap up another episode of Bubba and the Bloom here. Any final thoughts as we, miss our guy and, Start moving forward with things.
Yeah, we'll miss our guy. We didn't do this at the top because we had more important matters to tend to, but I'll reiterate, if anyone is coming to Arizona to go to first pitch, October 31st through November 3rd, we are playing. And I think I have like 13, 14 folks signed up for golf on Sunday, which November is awesome. 3rd. So yeah, which is great. So, if anyone's interested and still listening to the podcast at this point and going to first pitch, I know that probably whittles down the population, but hit us up. We'd love to add you to the group. Kevin in the chat is playing golf with us for, I think, the third year in a row.
He's been with us every year. Yep.
Which is sweet. So yeah, man, we cannot wait to see you out there, Kevin.
And the golf thing is great because it's like the conference, but we're on the course, obviously. And it's a mixture of analysts and just, you know, listeners and just friends of the show and stuff. So it's a good way. It's us and other analysts. I'm not going to name names until we lock in everything, but it's fun to kind of mix and match. And we mix analysts with the everybody else. We make it a point. We make it a point. Usually like two analysts and two attendees type thing.
Yep. We don't bite. We don't bite.
Yeah. So it's a lot of fun, and we just play for fun. We're not playing for like a scramble or anything. So one of these days, but not yet. But on that note, we'll wrap things up here. You can make sure you check out Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod. I'm at BD Intrick, and until next time, this is Bubba and Bloom, episode 158. We'll miss you, Luis.